You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
It's gonna be a football game tonight, now.
No doubt.
It's gonna be a football game.
Here. Okay.
I done been here.
All right, let's go, baby.
Play clock at 5. Pass is intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler. Unreal.
And the dream season is now complete. The Golden State Warriors are the 2015 NBA champions. Their first title in 40 years.
Swing and a pop-up. Side the ball, down the line, in foul ground. He's got plenty of room, and he's got it! And the Giants have won! They have won the World Series for the third time in 5 years!
5 to go. For the third time in 6 years, the Blackhawks are Stanley Cup champions!
The final whistle sounds! The Los Angeles Galaxy are the first to 5.
Yes!
What about that? It's John Brooks! It's John Brooks for the USA!
Ladies and gentlemen, football to football.
And your host, Sean Garmer and Matthew Pollard.
We are the champions. All right, had to play a little Queen there because the United States of America has won their third World Cup, the first time in 16 years. And this is the official post game of the Women's World Cup for Last Word on Sports. This is the Women's National Team game against Japan, the one that won the entire thing. I'm here. I'm your host, Sean Garmer, and joining me today is Mr. Chris Hasbrock.
Sean, how you doing?
Doing a hell of a good right now.
Yeah, you and me both, along with an entire nation.
Yeah, it was quite a crazy game. I mean, honestly, just I don't think anybody would have said, "Hey, we need to just score a bunch of goals in about 15 minutes and be already up there." Just insane, right? Just what do you think?
I think my prediction of 2-0 was a little off. And like I was saying, in previous shows, that if you would have told me that the United States was not using 2011 as any motivation, then they were way off. And they were, because you can't tell me that the way they came out, I mean, they were in sixth gear the entire time. I mean, they started off, I mean, 4 goals in the first 16 minutes on a very solid Japanese team, I mean, says it all right there. And, I mean, you could kind of sense it was game over, but then once Japan, pulled the one back, then it was just kind of like, well, okay, we'll see how it goes, and we just have to continue to control the tempo. Japan pulled another one back early on in the second half, and then it was like, okay. But how clutch of it was Tobin Heath to completely squash any momentum that they were even building. What a game. I mean, Carly Lloyd, hey, hats off to her.
Oh, Lord, and, yeah, Carly Lloyd, what? I mean,
unbelievable.
How just that shot that she takes from midfield, just amazing. And it goes wow. In, and then just the first goal she scored, is it the second or third?
The first goal she made was on that run, on the corner kick.
To where
she made
that amazing.
Long run.
She just ran through the entire, like, from outside of the box, just knows where it was going to be, just ran through the defense and freaking scores. I mean, like, no one saw that. It just, it was pretty much the definition of Japan's defense the entire game. Just,
well, how, we're talking about it because, I mean, I was, you know, I'm like I said, you know, previously, I think it was on our last show, I was telling you I was going to be at a family dinner. And it's just my wife is the only one that really, she played soccer and everything like that. So, like, everyone else really, you know, doesn't follow it or anything like that. And they were all intrigued, and they were all saying, how bad is Japan at, you know, defending the set pieces? And that was exactly what was going on today. I've never seen a team, you know, handle a set piece worse than what Japan did today. I was stunned at how bad they were. I mean, for Carly Lloyd to make that run like she did, like you said, from outside the box, run in on that ball and tap it in like that, unbelievable. I mean, just simply incredible. You know, I mean, hey. And, you know, I have to give a quick shout-out to Abby Wambach, finally getting that World Cup title. That's, you know, that's eluded her and her fantastic career. And Christy Rampone as well for, you know, the legend she is, 40 years old. You know, hey, true legend in U.S. women's soccer and her second World Cup title. So, you know, good for her. I'm so proud of, you know, of this team and what they did.
Yeah, I mean, how could you not be proud? Just, I mean, and it's not even like, oh, we barely squeaked by or anything. It was from the get-go, 3 minutes in, bam, then just keep taking it to them. Just, I mean, yeah, that third goal was a lucky bounce to Lauren Holiday. I mean, you know, it was kind of unfair to Japan at that point, who was only two goals down. They were trying their best to get back in this. Uh-oh. What? Did I just lose both of them? Oh, that's not cool.
I don't know, but you did gain another.
Okay, this is weird.
There we go.
Like you're both y'all are here?
I'm here.
Okay, yeah, because it told me call ended, and then y'all are somehow still on the call.
It's the beauty of live radio.
This is insane.
Hey, you know what? No matter what happens, we're good because we're world champions. So,
that's,
you know,
exactly.
It doesn't matter. We're good. We're in great shape now.
Hold on. Let me see if I can fix this. This is scaring me. I don't want it to be telling me that, no, there's not people here. And then,
hell, for all you know, there could be 37 people on the line. You don't know.
Here, hang up and call me again, because this is scary.
Hey, which one?
Both of you.
Hi.
Yeah, both of you call and hang up. I need to know that Skype has this on. I mean, y'all are coming through and everything, but Skype is telling me that the call is not here, so this is weird.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Oh, hey. We'll do it. We'll hang up and call back.
All right.
Yep. Bye.
Okay, well, let me get my usual co-host on here, Mr. Matt Pollard. He's joining us a little late here. Oh, y'all are both calling here at the same time. Okay, here we go.
There we go.
Now y'all are here. Let me get...
Much better.
Yes, much, much better when I know that y'all are both here. And Skype is telling me that you're both here. Now, this is terrible for the live listeners, but...
Hey, it's live radio. It's the beauty of live radio. I mean, what more can you ask for, you know?
Here, well, Matt, steal something from the other thing that Sean and I both love, what was it that Jim Ross would always say? Anything can happen when it's live.
There you go.
All right, Matt, Mr. Matt Pollard is joining us here.
Woo!
Woo!
That's all I got.
There we go.
All
right. Well, Matt, what do you think?
A comprehensive, thudding victory by the United States. I think Carly Lloyd proved why she's been the most impactful player ever since the knockout round started. You know, a few gaffes at the back, unfortunately. Both goals caused by Julie Johnson, if I remember correctly. But other than that, you know, absolute domination. I think this was, you know, a continuation of the tactical change that Jill Ellis made from the Germany game. It worked absolutely to a tune. You know, we hadn't really seen the U.S. dominate on set pieces, and you know, Japan's the shortest team the U.S. has played so far in the tournament, so absolutely dominant on that. I think one thing that I was actually thinking about on this one, Sean, you know, my dad's a little bit of a casual fan, and he was asking me a bunch of questions. You know, we were saying, you know, people were maligning the U.S. that they weren't really dominant, you know, thinking, oh, I thought Alex Morgan and, you know, Kristen Press were supposed to be the best players on the team. You know, I think similar to Germany last summer, where, you know, it was maybe a different player each time, even if we knew, you know, that Klose was the old guard and that Thomas Müller was the best forward they had coming up, it was a little bit of somebody different. You know, early on in the tournament when they were figuring things out, you know, it was Megan Rapinoe. You know, then we saw, you know, Julie Johnson stepped up, and defensively they were very sound. And then we saw Carly Lloyd take on. And, you know, we thought, you know, Sydney LaRue was going to be a major player in this one. She didn't even make, you know, she didn't even get on the field today. Neither did Kristen Press. And some people would want to use that to criticize some of the other players or say, you know, oh, that's an indication of, you know, the stars who we thought weren't dominant. I think it's an indication of just how deep this team is, how balanced they were, and how deserving they are as champions.
Hey, so, I mean, to piggyback on your point, Matt, it's perfect. It's, I mean, what you said is exactly right. That's the sign of a good team, a truly good team, and a truly, you know, a dominant team. When you're able to, you know, when you have the likes of Sydney LaRue, Kristen Press, who haven't seen the field in, Lord, for, you know, a couple games, knowing that they could come off the bench at any time and make an impact. I mean, it is true of a great team and a great championship team, and that's exactly what we saw here. And and like I said, I've been, you know, absolutely thumping Jill Ellis in the way, you know, her tactical approach to these games. I guess we're cheering with some fireworks. There we go. But I've been just criticizing her from, you know, from game one on. But, you know, ever since she made that, you know, the tactical change, I got to give her all the credit in the world because
necessitated, you know, by, you know, yellow card accumulation. So,
you know, and that's the thing is, I think Alexi Lawless said it perfect on the pregame show. How scary would it have been had Rapinoe and Holiday not got those second yellows to where they had to sit out? Because it forced Jill Ellis to make that change. And then now, look, I mean, ever since she did, look what happened. I mean,
yep. Unchained squad, pretty much, you know.
Exactly. And, I mean, they rolled. And, like I said, I do have to give Jill Ellis credit because, you know, she made the change to, you know, to put them in the best position, and that's exactly what happened. And, you know, she did it again today, untouched team, perfect, and it paid off.
Well, Patrick, I mean, you haven't got to be able to, you haven't gotten to say much here. What do you think?
You haven't even introduced me.
I'm sorry. Yes, calling in here. I forgot which game it was that he called in on before, but Mr. Patrick Ketza, he does a podcast called Wrestling Unwrapped, and that's where I know him from. But I've discovered that he's apparently at least a Women's World Cup soccer watcher, so
I'm a bigger follower of the women's national team than I am of the men's national team. I'll openly admit that, but
hey, I mean that's a good thing. There's so many people that, you know, considering there was that idiot at Sports Illustrated that said, you know, women's sports are not worth watching. You know, that's a real big, you know,
yeah,
something you don't hear every day that you go, I would support the women more than I do the men. I mean,
And yeah, the winning probably helps considering what the men's team has never even made it to the round of eight in the Men's World Cup. And here we are now celebrating the women's national team's third World Cup, their first in 16 years, you know, and it was the second one, the 99 one, that really got me following them more and more. And then after everything that happened 4 years ago with Wambach pulling off the, you know, miracle goal against Brazil, and then them losing, which was, believe it or not, actually the day after my birthday, and I don't even remember why I wasn't able to watch it, But then for U.S. to bounce back from there, go out and beat Japan in the Olympic final, and now to also take the rubber match and not just take it, but soundly take it. Because if you really want to think about it, the U.S. won this game 6-1. It just happened to be that one of their goals went in the wrong net.
Carly Lloyd has won the golden ball, and she wins the silver boot. Celia Sausage has won the golden boot with the tiebreaker. And Hope Solo's won the golden
double
glove.
Tiebreaker. Yeah, it took a double tiebreaker for that to happen because Boyd played more minutes, so that was the tiebreaker.
Whatever, they should give it to the player of the team that went the farthest, honestly. But
that's such a
it
dumb.
Is what it is.
It's such
Sean,
a dumb
I really
tiebreaker.
Don't think Carly Lloyd cares at the end of the day.
I know. She doesn't.
She's getting the one that counts.
She tied for the most goals. She then also tied for what would essentially equate to most points because of the assists. But in the end, I think she has one major trump card. I think she'll pick the silver ball because she has one major trump card. They're the world champions. In ungodly dominating fashion with the first half, the first 20 minutes, not even the entire first half, but the first 20 minutes of the game being the Carly Lloyd show. You know, and it was just, I don't think anybody expected it to be this one-sided. You know, I think if you were to take the first 30 minutes out, you know, you're looking at a totally different game. But, my God, when the U.S. had to pour it on, they poured it on. And I think the team's placement did have something to do with it because, like you said, the Japan goalie was staring into the sun for the entire first half. And by the time Hope Solo was staring into the sun, it was already 4-1. So there was less to fight for. But I don't think anybody could have gone into today expecting the absolute pure domination for the first half of the first half.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with you on that. It's certainly we dominated that first half. Again, I kind of feel bad for Japan a little bit because it was kind of settling down before that third goal. You make a miscue on defense, and immediately it's already 3-0, you know, just, yeah, who knows, could have been a different game. But I just think that, you know, we came out gunning from the get-go. You come put the pedal down. They had no idea how to deal with it. Like, you know, Chris and I had talked about in the previous game, they really hadn't played anybody like that, a just superior team. I mean, yeah, they got by England and everything, and maybe that showed. Maybe that showed that they were lucky to get by England. Who knows what we're getting if England had been here? But whether it was the players or the coach, he had no idea how to deal with the offense that was being put on, in front of them and blasting them. And then by then, you know, you kind of have the ability to kind of just deal with them defensively. And they got that one goal. Credit to them for getting the two goals, even though one of them was an own goal, like, you know, Patrick said. But this is all about the total team effort that was this game. And, you know, as Chris mentioned, you have to give it up to Joe Ellis, you know, because she could have tinkered. She could have pulled a Jose Mourinho and said, okay, well, I'm going to go back to the team that I know. I leave the team that's been winning out there. And she even did it with a sub. You know, she subbed Rapinoe out first before Tillman Heath, because Tillman Heath scored the last goal. So
I saw a great tweet tonight too, saying it spelled out everything perfect. You know you're playing a great game when Japan is making tactical subs 30 minutes into the game. I mean, that's right there. It just showed, like, you know, that's just how great it started off for us when Japan was making tactical subs, two subs in the first half to, you know, to try and get some semblance of an attack. And, you know, they were able to get, like I said, get the one back, which did make it a game. But, you know,
Well, honestly, it was just one of those situations to where, you know, we started off in sixth gear and kept going. And, you know, hey, they just, that goal from Carter Lloyd from midfield was just an absolute dagger. you know, I think that could have been a whole different ballgame. That really just took down any semblance of hope that they had. You know, even though they did pull him back later on, still, I mean, to give up a goal like that from midfield is just, I mean, that's a killer.
Yeah, so anything else you guys, I mean, Chris and I have kind of talked about it. It just kind of has touched that the two times that Chris and I have been on without the rest of you, we've gotten to talk about the World Cup as a whole. But now that we have, you know, Patrick and Matt on, I think it's a good question. What do you think about the tournament as a whole? When you look back, is this a win for the women's game? Do you think that adding the eight teams is something going forward that is really positive? I mean, we had the ups and downs, obviously, with some of the newcomers not doing very well at all. Some of them actually did pretty well, actually. What do you think, Matt?
I would say, with the exception of the turf issue, which I would almost, if there was a way to, if I could go to the FIFA Congress, whatever exists, and then petition to say no turf on any tournament, ever in the future, ever again, forever. But other than that, I think this was absolutely a win for the tournament. I liked the new format. I think it involved more countries, so we got to see a little bit more of the skill that's in the women's game, and I think that's really going to help push, you know, other countries to do what they can, because now, you know, there's more slots, so, you know, more teams, and especially the lesser continents of world football now have an opportunity to get involved in the game. I don't think there was a significant drop-off in the quality of the group play in comparison. I mean, even if you add the team, you think maybe, you know, okay, if we expand the tournament by, you know, twice the size of what it was previously, then, you know, we're going to get a drop in quality. But I don't think we had that at all. And I think as these countries, you know, continue to push the quality of their women's team, as they start to develop more women's leagues, in fact, as the WNPSL potentially looks into expansion, I think we're going to see an improvement in the quality of the professional women's soccer player, and I think we're going to see an improvement in the quality of the World Cup. On the women's side, and I'm saying this because I didn't know this, I did not notice this in 2011, and I haven't noticed it that significantly until really this year. The level of interest, I think, in the women's team may be only slightly up, but I think that margin of increase is in women watching more of the game and in young girls who play soccer noticing more of the game. You know, I have a few friends who have kids, and, you know, I would say the little girls who I know who play soccer, they're more interested in, you know, they want an Alex Morgan jersey. You know, they want to watch, you know, the Portland Thorns or, you know, the women's national team or, you know, the Northwestern Flash. You know, yeah, of course they know who David Beckham is if they're a Galaxy fan, for example. But, you know, in an interview on Extra Time Radio, in one of the friendlies coming up, people were, you know, little girls, you know, 13 years old, were going up to Dom Dwyer and saying, "Excuse me, Mr. LaRue, what's it like being married to Sydney?" Which, you know, I thought, which, yeah, okay, it took you guys a second there, but I mean, like, that's the level that we're at. And I think particularly, you know, I noticed on Facebook, on social media, all these other things, you know, women who weren't previous, who I were friends with, who were, say, casual soccer fans, paid as much, if not more, attention to this Women's World Cup than they did to Brazil last year. So I think that's an indication of the health and the level of growth that we have potentially in the game. And, like, honestly, now I'm going to pay more attention to the NWSL. You know, I want to, like, you know, Sydney LaRue plays for Northwestern Flash. Who's Alex Morgan play for? So, I mean, I'm more interested in that. I think this was, you know, this is a win for the women's game, and I think this is a win for U.S. for women's U.S. soccer, not only on the field but off it as well.
Yeah, I think the piggyback. I think as with all the flack and everything that's been going on, you know, with FIFA and everything, for the overall tournament, I think 24 is a really good number. Like you said, it seemed like, you know, the other games I was able to see, the quality did not seem to drop off that much. And, you know, now you have eight more teams that are able to show the world what they're capable of and able to show other countries what they're capable of. Do I think they could stretch it to 32? I think that would be pushing it. So I don't think they should do that.
Certainly not in the next cycle, but I think maybe maybe in two or three cycles.
Eventually we could go to 32. I could see that being
that would be the landmark, I think, for women's soccer. If you're getting on the same playing field as the men, same number of teams, same number of groups, all that stuff, I think that really shows, okay, we're here and it's an equal thing.
The one thing that's escaping me, who's the host city for 4 years from now?
It's France.
It's France?
France. Yes.
I actually think that's going to be a little bit of a more telling sign, because I think with the U.S. women's team being among, I won't say the, but among the most popular teams in the world, and the fact that of where the placement of everything was this year, I actually think 4 years from now with France might be a more telling sign of, is this really getting more popular? Because of the fact that, yes, it is still a different country, but like the final today was, in essence, a home game for the U.S. team, because Vancouver's only about, I think, 45 minutes from the U.S. border. So it was almost essentially a home game for them. So I think that helps, and to see, you know, all the fans and everything crowding around. But I think 4 years from now is going to be a really telling sign if everything is going to work. And I think how they're going to be able to, I should say, how FIFA is able to come back from everything with all the issues with Sepp Blatter and all of that. I think 4 years from now is going to be a really telling sign of, is women's soccer truly here again? Or does it just happen to be that one of the most popular teams in the world won? If that makes any sense, you know, because, you know, with all the rumors that Blatter, you know, legitimately, from what I've heard, didn't want to go be in Vancouver because he was afraid that he would be arrested and extradited to the United States. It wouldn't be that hard to do, you know, but I think that's still a black eye on everything, and it'll be nice to see how everything is going to happen and how everything's going to be different in 4 years. And even somewhat 1 year from now when everyone reconvenes in Rio.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point, but also Rio has nothing to do with FIFA because it's not the same. A more telling point will be what happens in the Euros next year. If everything's resolved and we have a new president by then, and if everything's okay with Platini and all that, whatever stuff. I think that does say one thing, that nobody was talking about the FIFA crap because the tournament was good and everybody was enjoying it, and obviously it helps on this side of the, you know, pond, that the U.S. has gone as far as they did, that Canada went pretty far, that England went pretty far. I mean, all teams that people care about over here. So, you know, I appreciate that, you know, Fox didn't beat us over the head with that crap, that it was left alone, and that we got to enjoy the tournament for what it was.
I'll say this. I don't think ESPN would have done that. I don't think they would have left well enough alone if ESPN had been the broadcaster this year. I think they would have absolutely bashed everyone over the head with it.
I don't know, and it's also the fact that maybe there's no more new information. Obviously, if there was new information, they would, because, you know, they did have Grant Wall there the first couple of days updating us on stuff. And then when there wasn't any more information, we didn't see him anymore. We didn't see... I think he was there for like one World Cup Tonight show out of all the shows. And that's when he had something important to say on the Hope Solo thing. So, you know, I think that it has wasn't information. Go ahead, what?
I think at some point if there's no new news, then it's just you're beating an old topic when you have, you know, with these kind of tournaments, you know, you're constantly covering the games that are happening. If there was a lull in the coverage of the tournament, I could see them bringing that up. But once you're into the knockout stage, it's okay, who's through? What's our next matchup? You know, what's happening in the final? So I don't know that that would have been a problem. One thing that I've actually been, I guess, hypothesizing on in the last, say, 15 years, the rest of the world has cottoned up to the U.S. women's national team in a number of ways in terms of the funding available to their women's sports. Obviously, it's nothing like what we have in the U.S. with Title IX and U.S. soccer, and the academies have caught up to a certain extent. I don't know that you can replicate the pool that we have just from the development of players from the college game or what the NWSL has, excuse me, with the exception of, I know, Sweden has a very good women's professional league, for example. But I guess the one thing I would be a little bit scared of is, you know, a good half, maybe two-thirds of the women's tournament, you know, the U.S. was playing ugly, simplistic Route 1 direct soccer. And the rest of the league, in a number of ways, has sort of caught up tactically with what's happening in the men's game. You know, the women's Brazil team isn't too far behind tactically what the men's Brazil team does, other than being dependent upon one number 10 player who's the third best player on Barcelona, but we won't talk about Neymar right now. So I think, you know, one thing I think that I'm a little bit worried about in the future is, you know, with some of the old guard and the more experienced players, you know, whether it's Abby Wambach or, you know, Megan Rapinoe would be 34, 35 going into France in 4 years, you know, is what Gillis was able to tinker with one thing, and then that was enough to put the U.S. over. But a lot of what the U.S. was able to do in this tournament was based on just the overall talent and experience of the players that they have. And at some point, do the other countries start to catch up with that experience, that talent, and that maturity to where other countries are more advanced tactically, that potentially gives them an advantage over the U.S. I'm not saying whatsoever that that's going to happen, but I think that's something really interesting to see that, you know, is a bit of an issue that, you know, Sean and I have bantered back and forth on about the men's team for the past 2 years and their sometimes nonsensical tactical moves.
Yeah, and the same thing could be said for, you know, basically you got the two most experienced teams in the final, right?
So, yes, absolutely.
I mean, and the oldest team in Japan got there, so, I mean, just look at that. I mean, you have to wonder if Japan will be the same when we come around in 4 years. They'll probably make it because of, you know, the way the system is over there in Asia, the way that the men always make it. But, you know, I think the more telling thing, I think what Matt said, what really shows if it's popular here as if you start seeing, not necessarily even the women, but necessarily like Navy, you see more people go to MLS games. You see the NWSL, whether it's ESPN or whether it's Fox, they deserve to have a much better TV deal than what they have right now. It's It's absolutely ludicrous, whatever that's not even a TV deal. That's a bogus, we'll try you out and see what the hell's going on deal is what that is.
I don't even know what the hell their TV deal is.
I
was going to say, that's where I thought that the ball was dropped in this. The NWSL should have been promoting their product throughout this, you know, throughout this tournament, especially on the long run the United States made. You know, I think right there, if you're able to promote your product while the whole country is captivated by this team.
I think it's because ESPN has that contract. I think it's why.
Oh.
I think it's ESPN has... They show the semifinals and the final of the playoffs, and then they show like one game for the entire season on ESPN2.
Wow. Yeah, that's tough. I mean, yeah, I think you still have to promote your product throughout. I mean, hell, if it is just on ESPN alone, if that's all you can do, then, you know, you have to take advantage of it, especially during this run that, you know, that the U.S. made. I think it was the ball was dropped on the NWSL's part.
Yeah, I mean, the NWSL itself could have tried to buy TV time or ad time or whatever, but, you know, this is where U.S. Soccer could have stepped in itself and made commercials for the NWSL, because you have a lot of those players playing in the World Cup. It's not even just for the USA, for various other countries, you know, and I don't think that other than certain announcers or certain, you know, like if that analyst or that announcer played in that league or still plays in that league, that's when it was mentioned. But other than that, nobody even said anything about it. So I think that this is kind of like 94, where it feels like it's almost like a, okay, here's the jump start. Let's see what happens in 4 years, you know?
Yeah.
Let's see what's going on in the women's club game here in the United States. I think, I mean, we kind of covered it all here. I think for one, for me, and I know for a lot of people, I certainly watched this tournament and watched more games than I thought I would because I enjoyed the play on the field. I enjoyed the fact that there wasn't players diving everywhere and, you know, getting up in the referee's face about cards and all that kind of stuff. I mean, much better as far as sportsmanship-wise. And maybe it's not the flashy, wonderful thing that sometimes you see in the men's game, but I think it is definitely comparable on many levels when you're talking about the best against the best. And, you know, I think the people that decided, oh, we're not going to care about this because it's the Women's World Cup and it's not the Men's World Cup, you certainly missed out, I think.
Sean, I think, you know, if you're just looking at the quality of soccer, you know, I thought Brazil was one of the up-and-comers. They were very exciting. You know, England overperformed. You know, I think, if anything, they made up for what the men's team has done in the past. Obviously, the U.S. was very excellent. Japan, you know, the old guard, also quality. So, I mean, there are a number of teams that are exciting. There are a number of characters that are fun to watch. You know, if you're not watching this game, it's, I'm not going to say out of bigotry or disinterest, or you're not watching it because the rest of the world isn't watching because it's a women's sport. So, I mean, to that SI, you know, reporter and the other people, like, I'm sorry you feel the way you do, but you're genuinely missing out on something that I think was quality, exciting soccer with interesting storylines, with characters that you could watch, you would come to know and appreciate.
All right, well, that's it for our post games on the Women's World Cup. Congratulations again to the United States Women's National Team for winning. And, you know, now they can say they're champions for 4 more years. And now, I mean, we won't be gone too long because Tuesday night the U.S. men begin their Gold Cup journey playing against Honduras in my old stomping grounds of Dallas, Frisco, Texas, over there on Toyota Stadium. It's certainly going to be an interesting Gold Cup. We did our predictions in the whole preview on the one we did, I think, on, when was it, Chris? A couple days ago?
Friday night.
Yeah, Friday night. So go take a listen to that if you want to hear what we think. Matt, you want to have any thoughts? Because I kind of had to read your stuff off of Messenger there.
I'm going to do a shameless plug and say that all of you listening to this, if you want the view of mine and many other people with whom I respect, you should stay tuned to Last Word on Sports, specifically Last Word Soccer Club, as we will have a number of articles coming out in the next 2 days leading up to the beginning of group play in the Gold Cup and all throughout the Gold Cup. We have about 10 writers participating in it. I myself will be covering Group A, specifically the U.S. men's national team.
All right, there you go. So hopefully, you know, all of it, you know, everybody here is welcome to join us for the podcast, and, you know, make sure you read all of Matt's stuff over there on Last Word, because he is certainly one of the best writers that the entire website has. So until next time, see you later, everybody.